So I took seriously the instruction to do this as a blackboard thing. So I will just do things on the blackboard, and then I'll in the end I'll just show some slides about.
We can wait, I think, for
5 minutes. Sure.
Austin is coming. If he was in the library.
Okay. So maybe I can just do something. Am I being filmed? Maybe I should just do it. Is it only just sound, a voice recording, or?
I think it's also, but it's just.
Ah, there it goes. It turned this way. Yeah.
It's just snapshots.
Ah.
Looks really funny.
Yeah, I still have to watch it. There's chalk. That's some chalk. Yeah, this is just people looking at me standing here, just freeze like this.
I think again, well, people are evaporating.
I think it's the weather.
The weekend is here, but
I look, there's nobody out there.
But yeah, so I came with Austin in the bus, and he went to the library. He told me that he will come, but probably it will take 5 minutes, perhaps.
Probably doesn't make sense to wait anymore.
All right. So I'll start. So I was saying that I took your instructions to heart, and since Friday is supposed to be the least formal of the talks, that's what I prepared, the least formal talk. I'll just be telling you about things that are in progress. You know, the work isn't finished and we haven't written it up. It's work in progress. This way I maybe can benefit from some comments or suggestions or whatever.
By the way, Peter Zoller, when he was here, he mentioned that if you're talking about the work in progress, maybe you actually don't want to be recorded.
Oh.
He thought that if that was him, he would probably prefer not to be recorded.
Nah, it's okay. It's all right. It's okay. We're in the process of putting it together. So, if somebody wants to rush off and do this work, hey, you know, c'est la vie. So what I'll be talking about is the some recent. Quantum Monte Carlo results for Bose-Fermi mixtures. I mean, you know, the why are these interesting, so on, you all know that. A lot of experimentalists now are doing experiments on these mixtures, whether on an optical lattice or not optical lattice, etc. We're looking at this on a one-dimensional optical lattice. One-dimensional, well, first, quantum effects are very interesting in one dimension, but also one has to be honest and admit that there is a technical problem, that is, if you want to simulate fermions in two dimensions, it's much harder. You have the sign problem and things become very difficult. So we'll start in one dimension, see where we go from there. So we're starting with the Hubbard Hamiltonian, which I'll write the Hamiltonian here. And you all know it, but just write it down. So sum over near neighbors. I have a kinetic energy for the bosons, kinetic energy for the fermions. So I shouldn't put this here. So I have boson hopping parameter, and then AI, or did I use B's? I use B's. BI dagger BJ plus BJ dagger UI plus T for the fermions. And then, you know, the normal thing, CI dagger CJ plus CJ dagger CI. So this is the kinetic energy term, and then there are the interactions. You have the boson-boson interaction term, so that's UBB over 2. So this is, these are not necessarily hardcore boson, although some limit, one can look at that limit. Ni minus 1, where Ni is the number of bosons on site I, plus UBF, Bose Fermi. This is the interaction between the boson and the fermion. If they meet, the sum over I from, of course, 1 to L, the number of sites on the lattice. And here it is Ni, Mi, where to avoid using too many superscripts and subscripts, Mi represents the number of fermions on site I. Okay? And then, of course, you need to control the number of particles on your system, depending on what you use. If you're, let's say, writing it in the grand canonical formalism, you'd have a chemical potential for the bosons and a chemical potential for the fermions. Okay? So this is the Hamiltonian, and as you can see, the order, parameter space is very huge. So one has to start somewhere, which is relatively simple. And there's been a little bit of work on this sort of Hamiltonian. Matthew worked on this using and certain limits, mostly commensurate filling, using bosonization methods. Lord Pollitt and Matthias Troyer and collaborators wrote a paper on using quantum Monte Carlo at half filling, at double half filling, for this Hamiltonian. So I'm going to start first by reviewing some of the results from that paper, and then show you where we went from there. We are collaborating with Lord Pollitt on this project, and my colleague in Nice, Frederick Ebert. So the easiest thing to start with first is to take this, the two hoppings to be the same. So we're going to take TB equals to TF. That's the simplest. And in our case, we're using a canonical ensemble for the simulation. We fix the number of particles and we do the simulation. So we do not have these as control parameters. Our control parameter is the number of fermions and the number of bosons, but it's the same number of control parameters, of course. And so we're going to take L equals to 70, and number of bosons equals number of fermions equals to 35. To begin with, this to review the results of the published work of Pollitt and Matthias and their collaborators.
So you predict the number of particles.
Yes, yes. So this is a nice algorithm that Lord cooked up, where it's a worm algorithm, but it conserves the number of particles. So it has advantages and disadvantages, efficiencies and inefficiencies. One of the big advantages is if you're interested in fixing the number of particles, you don't have to tune your chemical potential, and you don't have fluctuations of the particle number. One of the disadvantages is that if you're interested in time-separated quantities, you know, like the correlation function separated in space and time, you cannot do it with this. But, you know, it's okay. All right, so this is what they did, what they started with studying. And before I show you the phase diagram, let me first mention the quantities that we are calculating, physical quantities that we are calculating, because this is what we use, of course, to characterize the phase diagram. So we're using, of course, calculating the bosonic and fermionic green functions. So G boson of I minus J is equal just to the average expectation value of this quantity. Okay, and the fermionic one, of course, the fermionic operators. And we're also looking at, and this is something that came up in your talk yesterday. It's going to be slightly different today, but we'll discuss that. So we're also calculating, they calculated, and we will be calculating the combined Bose-Fermi correlation function, which is given by BJCI. CJ dagger, BI dagger. Okay, so this is the combined green function. Now, if we were interested in the attractive case here, UBF being negative, which we're not, we're doing mostly, we're doing all only positive here, although one can do the negative case. The negative case would favor bosons and fermions sitting on the same side. And then in that case, what you would use here is something like CIBI. You would destroy a pair on site I, and you would create them, say, at site J. But here, what we're interested in the positive UBF, and so multiple occupancies are not favored, so it doesn't make sense to do that. So what we look at is this, which destroys a boson, a fermion on site I, and a boson on site J, and creates them the other way around. So this is basically the Green function for a particle exchange between two sites. Okay.
So for the particle hole composite.
I'm sorry?
So the Green function for the particle called composite, the BI target CI, CJ target
BI. Yes. Okay, so these are the Green functions that we are calculating. So they will be either exponential, they will exhibit either exponential decay or power law decay. For example, the power law decay for boson Green function would be like this, 1 over. Basically, it's a periodic power law, so it'd be sine pi x over L, absolute value, and then you have the Lefmanger parameter for the boson. For the fermion, you would have something similar, except that you'd have oscillations on top of it. So you'd have the sine of number of fermion flavors, number of fermion particles. Here, it's L over 2. Okay, for here it's L over 2, but later it'll change. Pi x over L divided by the same thing here. So that'll be sine pi x over L raised to the Schrödinger liquid for the fermions. Okay, the case I will first be reviewing is NF is L over 2, so this would be sine pi x. So it'd have, you know, up, down, up, down.
So we expect this to be the case.
If you have a power law decay, this is how it's going to be. For example, if you have free fermions, okay, if you have free fermions, this is what you would have, okay. And the exponential decay is just e to the minus x over xi, something like that, okay. So I just wrote this form. In case you have a power law, you would see what the power law looks like. Exponential, we all know what exponential looks like. Here, it's a little bit funny because, you know, the fermions have this oscillation from one side to the other. So just wanted to make sure to mention it, okay? And, of course, we don't know in advance what we're going to see, but we're going to measure. Okay, in fact, we're going to see both exponentials and power law. Okay? Is that fine? Yeah. Okay, but that's not all. There are more things we're going to measure to help us characterize the phase diagram. I'm going to leave this here for the phase diagram because when I pull down the screen, I want to be able to see the phase diagram. So I'll just do this. So. Other interesting quantities, two other important correlation functions are the correlation functions, either the density-density correlation function or, say, the spin-spin correlation function. So the CDW correlation function, if in case we have a CDW here, would be measured by it's a density-density correlation function. So you have Ni plus Mi, total number of particles on site I, total some number of particles on site J. Oops. Okay, minus, of course, Ni, Mi, and Nj plus Mj. Okay, so this is the density-density correlation function. This will tell us if there's a CDW order. For example, by looking at the structure factor, we look at where the peak is, if there's a peak. And the spin... The SDW, the spin density wave correlation function, which will tell us if there's some sort of spin correlation function, spin order, is the following. it'll be ni minus mi and j minus mj connected, so minus that part. Now why we call this the spin correlation function? Because if you go to the hardcore limit of this system, for example, the hardcore bosons will be equivalent to fermions in one dimension. Okay, so you can, for example, use the Jordan-Wigner transformation to express the bosons as fermions, and so you would see that you have two types of fermions. Well, you can call one of them spin up, and you can call the other one spin down, and therefore this would be the net spin on a site. Okay, so this is taken from that language, even though we are now in the soft core case. Okay, so this is the spin density wave correlation function, and again this could be a power law or an exponential or whatever. Power laws would be of that form, an exponential we all know what it's like. And finally, a set of measurements that's very interesting, as you will see. And again, this comes back to something that Lewis mentioned yesterday, although not quite so far. The superfluids, the superfluid densities. And that's about fermion stiffness. We don't want to call them fermion superfluid density. So the superfluid density for the boson, the bosons, is the length of the system divided by 2 beta times the average of the square of the winding number of the bosons. Winding number, just briefly, if I have a one-dimensional system like this, you know, this is my lattice. You all know that when you're doing quantum Monte Carlo, basically the beta direction becomes like another dimension. So a one-dimensional system becomes like a two-dimensional classical system. And a particle here will trace in this 1 + 1 dimensional space, it'll trace a world line. Okay, so a world line meandering like this, this has a winding of zero, but it is certainly possible for there to be a big fluctuation like this, since we have periodic boundary conditions in the space direction, and of course periodic in the beta direction. In the beta direction, of course, the periodic boundary conditions are imposed because the partition function is a trace. In the space direction, it's convenient to reduce finite size effects and so on. So this guy can come out here, and then it has to come and finish the trace like this. So this would be a winding of 1. If it did it in the other direction, it would be a winding of -1, for example. Okay. So the average of this for your system is 0, because the system is at rest, there's nothing going on. But there could be fluctuations. It could be 0 because there simply are no fluctuations, so it's strictly 0. Or it could be 0 just on average, but the average of the square is not 0. So this would give you the superfluid density for the bosons. And the fermion stiffness is by the same thing, and I use the same letter, although it's not a superfluid density, we don't call it that. So it's L over 2 beta, and the average of the square of the fermion winding number, because the fermions can do something like this also.
So does it mean that you're computing everything by temperature?
Everything is at finite but extremely low temperature. Yes.
Beta
is 1 over the temperature, basically, yes. So beta here could be 100, it could be 200, could be... I mean, I feel safe even with a beta of 20 or 30, okay? But here, betas are larger than that. It depends on the problem, actually. If you're doing disorder, you really should go to as large a beta as you can. But here we have no disorder, and... it works okay. And you, of course, as what you would do in general, you should always do a finite size study and a finite beta study and make sure that your beta is large enough.
Okay. And, I don't know this relationship between winding number and the superfluid density. So is there a simple way to understand why this should be stiffness?
Yes. Well, okay, but first, maybe one thing that is you find maybe uncomfortable or is bothering you is what would happen at beta equals 0, or the thermodynamic limit of the system. How would the system wind? How would we measure it? One way to measure this, of course, is you can, I mean, in this simulation, we are actually measuring W. But in other simulations where measuring W directly was not feasible, what you can do is you can measure your current correlation function. Okay? You can measure a current-current correlation, you know, a Kubo-type relationship. You measure current-current correlation function, Fourier transform, and take the limit as omega goes to zero, and that gives you the superfluid density. I mean, this is a well-established relationship. Now, why in this case I'm using this? I mean, how can one motivate physically the W for the superfluid density? You can think of twisting your boundary conditions, right? I mean, this is what you need in order to provoke superfluid flow. Let's say you want to study the free energy at zero, you know, zero twist, and then you twist it and you measure the difference in the curvature of the free energy as a function of the twist. That basically gives you the superfluid density, right?
So this is like a twist.
So here what you're doing, this is like a twist, and this is essentially like a twist of 2 pi. Okay, you can to do the twist of 2 pi. It doesn't make sense in Monte Carlo because e to the I 2 pi is 1, and so basically the it is difficult to implement. But if you do it formally, this, I mean, the velocity basically, right? The superfluid velocity vs, just like that, is the gradient of the phase of the wave function, and if you integrate this over the size of the system. Okay, this has to be quantized. Otherwise, you know, the phase has to close because this, the system has to, you know, the wave function has to be periodic. Okay, and so this, okay, this integral over the size of the system has to be a multiple of 2 pi that quantizes the velocity for you. And this is what is reflected here. This is 1 or 2 or 3. And of course, there's a prefactor of some parameters for the mass and so h bar and so on for the velocity. But this integer winding, why is it related to superfluid density, comes from the integral of the velocity around. If there's a superfluid fluctuation in the system, what will happen? The system has, there'll be a superfluid flow fluctuation around the system. The velocity of that fluctuation has to be quantized. So it has to be described by some integer value quantity. That's what this is.
But I guess if you write down Feynman's path integral,
yeah,
with the twist,
yes,
you can see that the things which carry the phase dependence, it enters as e to the I theta.
Yes,
w,
absolutely.
And then you expand.
Yes,
the,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you,
yeah,
get the variance of W.
Exactly, yes. I mean, that's how you would do it. If I wanted to go through the proof, that's how I would do it, okay? But, I mean, in fact, what you can easily show, again, I don't think I'm going to show it now, but this was shown, it's not so difficult to show, is that the partition function in a winding number, the partition function of, let's put it this way, the partition function with a twist of phi at the boundaries is in fact equal to the expectation value of something like e to the I phi, let me call it this way. But this expectation value is calculated with the untwisted partition function. Okay, this is the partition function with a twist. This is the average of this operator using the untwisted partition function. Now, there are some quantities here which will couple this to the untwisted variables, but basically this is how you would give you the twisted superfluid density. This will, you can expand it and give you some other quantities, and you can get it. But it's what you said. You just write it with a twist. You write the path integral, coherent states, whatever you like, and then you'll get it. This relationship was, I think. This particular expression was obtained by Pollock and Seppelin back in 84, I think, 1984, just by doing what he said.
What's the physical meaning of rho hat?
Right, sir. It's just the fluctuations of the fermions like this, you know. I mean, you're right. I wrote it rho SF because since it's the same sort of quantity, I didn't want to use a different letter, but it's not a superfluid density, of course. It's just since you have a finite system and a fermion can do this. And we will see that. The fermions and the bosons, what the fermions and bosons are doing and with regards to this sort of fluctuation is going to be strongly correlated in this system. But it's just a big fluctuation in what the fermions are doing. Okay?
Well, you could take, for example, one-dimensional fermions and make them into Laringer liquid, then they do have stiffness.
Yeah, this is exactly it. I mean, another way of saying it, if you really want, one-dimensional fermions, you can, you know, my way of thinking about, the way I like to think about them is they're hardcore bosons, and hardcore bosons can, again, we come back to this, there's a Luttinger liquid, they have superfluid density and so on. Okay? Okay, but that's not the whole story for these guys, because in fact, as you see, there's something very interesting that will be going on. You can measure this, but of course you can also calculate, call this? This is the pair superfluid density, okay? And that would be L over twice beta, and then you would have, you measure WF plus WB squared. Okay, first let me write the other one and then say why. The other one is the, just use the same notation. Yeah, the counter-rotating superfluid density, I'll call it that. That is the same but with a minus sign. So it'd be WF minus WB squared. Now, if the winding fluctuations, if these, you know, large-scale fluctuations of the bosons and fermions are uncorrelated, then this quantity is equal to this quantity, is equal to this plus this. That's all. But if they are correlated, then this quantity, these quantities will tell us what sort of correlations there are between them. Okay?
So will it make sense just to compute WF times WP average?
WF times WB.
Since you've already computed the squares,
you'll
just compute the product.
Like this, WF times.
Inside the bracket.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, yes. But it is nice to see it this way because of what we will see. Because this will tell you in which way these things are correlated, and it's not any easier to do it the other way or easier to do it. It's the same measurement, right? Because per configuration you have this, you have WB and WF configuration by configuration, okay?
So I guess in general there's a matrix response, a matrix superfluid response.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to, and I will show that at some point. Okay, so to begin with, I'll start by reviewing this briefly the results that Lord, Paulet, and Matthias got, and then move on to what we are trying to do. So we're going to take the hopping parameter TB and TB and TF to be the same, and then what they found. I'll just draw the phase diagram here, and then keep it because I will refer to it often. So this is UBV. Okay, so here TB equals TF equals 1. Okay, so this is UBB, UBF. And then they found something like this, just schematically. And then here, something like that. And this is, and I'll go through the phases one by one. This is Okay, so here what they found, when UBB when UBB and UBF are relatively small, or certainly UBF is small compared to UBB, that allows a double occupancy, that the fermion boson occupancy of a single site, and so these particles can move around and intermingle. There's no problem. So you just have a Luttinger liquid here. Okay, so you have a Luttinger liquid. They found basically two types. They characterized by the following. Here, KF is, I think, just not to mix them up, it is either, see? Yeah, KF is smaller than KBF. Okay, here all three functions, GB, GBF, and GB, GB, GF, and GBF are power laws, okay? Each giving a Luttinger parameter. In the LLA, KF is less than KBF. In the LLB, it's the other way around. Okay, but that's what distinguishes these two. Otherwise, they are Luttinger liquids, power law decay, and so on. Now, in this phase, okay, what they found is an SDW phase. In other words, roughly speaking, a little bit more than roughly speaking, but you have boson, fermion, boson, fermion, boson, fermion. So it's almost like CDW, but not quite. We'll see why. An interesting question is, why would these particles arrange themselves like this? There's no near-neighbor interaction. There's only contact interaction, and yet they settle themselves in something like this. One argument is, of course, a simple, you know, qualitative argument is energetic. In this region, the bosons don't like to meet other bosons because UBB is large, okay? Fermions can never meet other fermions because of the Pauli principle. But bosons still like to spread their wave function. Well, a way to spread their wave function is if a boson can meet a fermion, if a boson can hop on top of a fermion, this would be a way for the bosons to spread their wave functions, because this boson is here, it can jump on top of this. Okay, this can jump here, and then they can jump back. So by for a boson to have two fermions, two fermion neighbors, they can bounce back and forth, and so the bosons can spread their wave functions without meeting other bosons. So this is favorable energetically, and they arrange themselves like this.
So you assume here that everything goes in the ground state, or you consider only the ground state?
Yes, in principle, I mean, even though Victor remarked on this, beta is finite. Beta is so large that we're looking at the ground state. Okay, just we consider this to be the zero temperature limit. Okay.
But again, this order that you are having, this boson, so on, is due to, you say that this is due to a sort of second order process, which is inducing
yes.
a sort of nearest neighbor.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And we will see. And we will see this, I think, exhibited a little bit more when we look at these things. We'll see why I'm saying this.
So if we go up to UBB, UBF, to infinity, then you've got the species never. Are we always at half filling?
Yes. Here we're at double half filling. Yeah.
Okay.
Half an hour. So for the moment it's double half filling, and what I will talk about in a little bit is when we move away from double half filling. Now.
In the Luttinger liquid, I mean, in general, if I have both fermion mixtures, I would expect that the fermions immediately undergo a pious instability
mm-hmm.
to form a density wave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would, in your case, correspond that you have some type of algebraic order in spin density waves, so that essentially a feature should appear in a Luttinger liquid phase that your charge spin density wave should also be decay algebraically. Yes, but it should have some peak at the density order.
Okay.
Actually a spin density wave.
Yes. 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 Well.
Be that been analyzed?
Okay. Well, let me tell you what the functions, what these functions behave like. Okay. The GF and GB. Independent separately are exponential. Okay, decay exponential. If you just look at the boson green function separately, or at the fermion green function separately, it decays exponentially. If you look at GBF, it is a power law. Okay, So GBF power law. Okay, so that what that tells you is you have quite a bit of fermion boson exchanges. Okay, it's quasi long range order. So you have, so there's that. That's one one result. And also the SDW correlation function, which unfortunately this one. Okay, this one shows, if you look at its at it in space like this, it shows, which I'll be showing it. You know, it shows these oscillations. Which, I think you're talking about.
Yeah, but here it's from low range order. It's not, does the charge change the algebraic decay, or is it really a fixed order? Because it's a gap system, I could imagine that it's really low range order.
It's not, I don't think it's gapped. It's not gapped here. The spin excitations are not gapped.
Okay, but here this the charge spin density wave. Is it constant?
Is it constant?
It's oscillating with a finite amplitude and does not decay.
No.
So
it does not.
Long range order.
Yes. I'll be showing it, but yes, the answer is yes. It's short range only.
Can you maybe just clarify for me? I thought that Poisson stability occurs if a lattice can also move. You know, you could bring some sides closer together, some other sides farther apart, and that leads to the formation of charge density waves. Is it what you are referring to?
I mean, the lattice is reaching what you need for spice instability is fermions with the fermion surface interacting with Follon degrees of freedom,
mm-hmm.
with the linear dispersion.
Okay.
Now, as we have bosons, we have the bosons have a linear dispersion, so these are my fermions interacting with the fermions, which have a fermion surface.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, on the right side, it is equivalent to fermions interacting with bosons in the lattice.
Okay.
And so I would expect that this interaction with the bosons induces Poisson instability for the fermions. But because now it depends whether this Poisson instability leads to a gap phase or not. If it is not gap, then it will just tell you that there are still fluctuations, the density wave doesn't have to be fixed, the Poisson phase is not fixed in space, so it can float, so that we should have a CSW, which has some correlation indicating the oscillation, but it decays with an algebraic factor, because it's a non-pinned. So it's a question whether the charge density, whether this Poisson instability leads to a density wave which is pinned or not pinned.
So commensurate with the lattice, or incommensurate with the lattice?
General commands of the incommensurate here, I don't know exactly.
The way it's written looks like it's commensurate.
This is the total number of bosons plus fermions is equal to L. And that's what they find. I'm going to speak mostly in a little bit after when we leave this proportion. It's still commensurate filling, the total number, but different proportions of bosons and fermions. And in the end, if you have some time and you want, I can show you what happens when you completely leave that, you know, incommensurate. But you will still have these oscillations, these SDW oscillations, even when the filling is essentially whatever you like. The SDW still have them.
So yeah. So my question is whether this correlation, which is long range in the SW phase, whether it's still algebraic in the locking of liquid.
Oh, whether it's algebraic here?
Yeah. Whether that has been observed.
They did not mention that, I think. And we did not, I mean, we have all the results, but I don't know. I cannot tell you offhand. I would have to look about it, look at it more carefully and look at, I don't know offhand. But we have all the results.
So in the SDW phase, is there also some CDW order or no? It seems a little bit strange because generically I would have expected on symmetry grounds that really the only symmetry being broken here is translation by one lattice site.
But these, the thing is, I mean, CDW, if you have CDW, basically you don't really have hopping between the I mean, here I have this guy.
That's only if you have a very strong CDW. I'm talking about some weak CDW order.
Well, okay. I mean,
I would say you have CDW order if there's not a symmetry that interchanges bosons and fermions, which there probably is not. Because this
here there isn't. I mean, this is, you have soft core bosons here, and so it is not.
So I think generically on symmetry grounds, one should expect that there has to be some CDW order in this.
It's very, very weak. The gap is exponentially the gap's exponentially small. The charge gap, excitation gap, is exponentially small. So I don't think you can even see it numerically, but it is known that it's exponentially small. Okay.
And even splits the sign of the Bose Fermi interaction. Essentially, the picture gets inverted with SDV not replaced by charge density rate?
Yes, there is that relationship if you flip the sign of that charge, of the interaction. Okay. There's another way to get CDW is to change the ratio here. I'll mention this at the very, very end as perspective for other work. Okay. Okay. And then there's this phase here. This is phase separation, because what happens here is if the repulsion between the bosons and the fermions is so large that the bosons gain nothing by having two fermions, it is so much larger than the Bose-Bose interaction, the bosons would rather have bosonic neighbors because they can just jump on their bosonic neighbors and roam around, and so they gain that way. And so the system just simply phase separates here. Okay, so that roughly and qualitatively how one would understand the system. Of course, there's always a question what happens at boundaries and so on. These are not questions that can be answered with such a qualitative argument, I think, but they did the numerics, and indeed this is the phase diagram that comes out.
So I guess if I went up to U to infinity limits in both things, could I argue how the phase boundary between SDW and phase separation region?
If you go both UBB and UBF to infinity?
Yeah.
Well, okay. If you go to UBB infinite, then the bosons become fermions. I mean, they're really like they're hardcore bosons, so they're like fermions. So it's like having two species of fermions. And if UBF is infinite, the repulsion between these two species of fermions is infinite.
Yeah. So okay. So limit, it doesn't matter which order I put them in. It's a sort of pathological limit. But as you depart from that limit, either with I guess there's an order of limits in the sense that if UBB is the bigger one, then you'd get.
Yes, I mean, if UBB is the bigger one, then you have two fermion species interacting with UBF. So you have two Luttinger liquids. If you know UBF is relatively mild, it's just two fermion species just bumping around with each other and in one dimension. And
No, I meant simply stuck at the half filling. Case, then they wouldn't be liquids because the system's completely filled with fermions.
Yes.
But you can just paint them different B or F.
That's right.
They never change around. But if we then depart to make either UBB finite or UBF finite, then I guess you could argue that you either get spin density wave or phase separation. But actually, I'm just wondering what the trajectory of that line is as you go to infinity.
This line here? Oh.
I mean, it must be possible to work anyway. I guess it just gives in at UBB to UBF always. Well, I'm thinking that if UBB is the bigger one, then you have the configuration written because you will, the lower would be FBF, because you will tend to hop on a fermion, but you'll never hop on a boson. Whereas if UBF is the bigger one, then you'll never hop on a fermion, and you'll maybe hop a little bit on a boson, so they separate. So that would suggest the line goes exactly, that asymptotically goes 45 degrees.
So which one do you want to take to infinity first is the question, right?
It matters.
It matters, I think, yes. Okay, so... All right, so that's the review of that paper. Okay, so
this is your paper?
No, this is a paper by, I have the preprint, I don't have the published reference, but it appeared in Physical Review Letters, I think, by Lord Paulet, Matthias Troyer, Chris van Hook, and Stefan Rombu. Okay, so it's a CONMAT, if you like, 0512243. I mean, there's more in this paper, but this is what I'll be using to continue, and then I'll come in the end at very briefly what happens when you unbalance these things. So now this phase diagram reminds me. I mean, the way I got into this is that this phase diagram reminded me of another phase diagram which I was looking at the time this preprint came out, which I will sketch briefly. When this paper came out, I was looking at the one-dimensional extended Hubbard model, which you all know. You have AI dagger AJ, whatever, BI dagger BJ, doesn't matter, plus V is the near neighbor interaction, IJ, NI, NJ. So here I have an explicit near neighbor interaction. And the phase diagram of this at half filling, okay. So half filling here means the number of bosons is half the number of sites. The phase diagram looks something like this. I'm going to put the U here and the V here. But it looks something like this, roughly speaking. Okay, so this is a CDW, okay, and this is a superfluid or Luttinger liquid. And this phase diagram reminded me of that one, which I was looking at, because it looks the same, except, of course, I have no phase separation here. But I have no phase separation because here, instead of having fermions, bosons, I have fermions and empty sites, and the empty sites are not just going to phase separate and sit together. So that's how one can understand why there's no phase separation there. But here, this is CDW, so I have a boson, empty site, boson, empty site, boson, empty site. And what was interesting here is what happens if you go away from half-filling, okay? This is what I was interested in at the time. So if you go away from half-filling, so here I can, in some sense, but not too literally, I can regard the empty sites as the fermions, if you like. Now, if I start from this sort of configuration, okay, and then I dope away from half-filling, let's say I remove this and I replace it by an X. In other words, here, what I'm going to do, the analogous thing, is to remove a fermion and add a boson, or remove a boson and add a fermion, doesn't matter. So now I have this. Well, this guy now still cannot move here because if it moves here, it'll acquire a near neighbor, and that's not favored. But it finds that it can move here. It can move here. Because if it moves here, there's no near neighbor, so that's okay. So let's say they do that. So then I have this. Okay, and then this guy, for example, can move here. So then I have something like this. So what you see basically is, and of course similar stuff could be happening here. So what you see is you have sort of like this, these two sites, sort of like a bound state of two sites that is moving around. Okay. So this is a quasi-particle excitation, a soliton if you like, because it interpolates between a ground state where the A sublattice is full and a ground state where the B sublattice is full. So this is your soliton moving around the system. And in fact, your system here becomes a superfluid. Okay? Superfluid, and the dispersion relation, if you manage to calculate it, so this is the omega of k, looks something like this. It is linear here, so meaning your basic excitation, your low energy excitations are phonons, the superfluid is stable according to the Landau criterion, and then it does something like this. Okay, so this k here, the value of k that you get here, of course, corresponds to a peak in your structure factor, in the density-density structure factor. And that the value of that k is, you know, a measure of the, if you like, the size of this domain here, this domain wall. Okay, so we saw these things in this system. We also saw super solids, but I'll come to that later, time permitting. So I was curious if something like this happens there. First, what happens if I move away from the double half filling there? And second, will there be these soliton type excitations? Will there be a peak in the structure factor indicating such a behavior? Of course, the peak, if there is one here, one should look for it in the SDW structure factor, because there's no CDW, and here we're looking for it in the CDW.
The peak is at which?
At which moment? It depends on the doping. Okay, it depends on how many bosons you have removed. Okay, what happens is, if you remove one, let's say this is pi here. If you remove one boson, what you'll get is you get something like that comes like this. Okay, whoops. So this pi actually is very high here. This is just before pi. Okay, pi is here. You remove another boson, this moves like this, and it moves up. Okay, so it becomes more like, I don't know, this. You move another one, it moves back and up. So you get a figure sort of like this, always linear here. And so as you get closer and closer to pi, at least this is what we've found numerically, you know. As you get closer and closer to pi, as you get closer and closer to half filling, the position of the dip gets closer to pi, and it goes down in height. So the critical velocity, if you like, is approaching zero. And then at pi, suddenly you get your charge gap. And okay?
But does that only happen when t equals v?
In this, it happens when t equals v. No, in this case, I take t. I always take t equals one that sets the scale, and this happens when u is large enough to suppress double occupancy, and v is large enough to suppress new neighbors. So typically, for example, a lot of the simulations that I did are for u at 10, because this is still a rather large parameter space. So I fix u to be 10, sort of, and v of the order of around 4, 5, 6, something like that, that you would get this.
Okay, yeah, so if I took u equals infinity, though, then...
Here, yes.
Then t equals v is SSU2 invariant, so I guess that must correspond to where the dispersion goes to 0 at pi.
If you take u to be infinite, then this is a hardcore limit.
So you can map to spins.
Yes.
And then the case t equals v presumably corresponds to is SU2 model. And this is your 2k. This would be your 2k effect expectation.
Now, maybe if you want to think of it in terms of spins, you would like to add here the chemical potential, which correspond to magnetic field. Okay, because here I'm saying, you know, I move away from half filling and so on, which in your language would correspond to applying a magnetic field. Okay, and so this sort of thing happens when you have a magnetic field, right? When you dope away from half filling.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, and this is in the absence of a magnetic field.
The supercommutivity is given by these pairs which are nonlinear. But you have, in addition to this, you have a charge density wave order. So
yes. Well, okay. The charge density. You know, when I do like this, when I remove a particle, okay, when I remove a particle, in fact, this meandering quasi-particle here destroys long-range order. So I have quasi-long-range order. Okay. Now, if we go to the limit that you were talking about, where I go to hardcore or just very large u, this system is almost particle Hoare symmetric. If it's hardcore, it is particle Hoare symmetric. If it's just very large u, it is almost particle Hoare symmetric. So in that limit, whether I add a particle or remove a particle, I'm going to destroy long-range order, and I do not get a super solid. Just to give you a little preview, though, if I take U larger than V, but, or, I mean, I always, I like to have U larger than V, okay, because that's a little bit more physical, but U less than 2V, and this is sort of a mean field value, but it's close to that. If I take this limit, and instead of taking away a particle, I add a particle. Okay, if I want to add a particle, and I was at half filling, okay? I add a particle. Now the particle has a choice either to go on an empty site or a full site. But in this case, it is cheaper for the particle to go on a full site. Okay? So you add a particle, it goes here. And because of fluctuations and hoppings and stuff, this particle can actually hop. It does essentially a double hop like this. So in fact, what you have is sort of this defect made of two bosons, which is moving around your system. And in this case, you stabilize your supersolid. Okay? So this stabilizes the supersolid. In this case, if U is less than 2V, and you dope above half filling. If you dope below half filling, phase separation again, or, you know, first order transition. Not phase separation in one dimension. Sorry. What you have is you destroy. You have these solitons. In two dimensions, it's a phase separation. Okay. And this is another. You know, also Matthias and Pinaki Sengupta did this. In fact, first in two dimensions, where they looked at the case where U less than 4V. Okay. And they found that stabilizes the supersolid if you dope above it. In one dimension, something similar happens, but the phase diagram is different because you don't have phase separation in one dimension.
Can I just check on these dispersion relations? Is it really the threshold of the where the dynamic structure factor becomes non-zero? I mean,
it is okay. It's what okay here. Okay, I went very fast because this was not the crux of my talk. What I would like really is to do what you are saying, calculate the dynamic structure factor, the Fourier transforms, and look at the peaks and so on. But that's very tough, okay? Because first you need to calculate time-separated correlation functions. In our case, it's imaginary time-separated correlation functions and the maximum entropy and stuff. It's very expensive. So what I do instead is I use the F-sum rule to get sort of an upper bound on the... Yes. So I take my omega of k is the integral omega s of k omega over the integral of s of k omega. Okay. This is what... I use this. Okay. And then this is basically just... The, if I remember my normalization right, is just the number of bosons times the static structure factor, and this here is sort of related to the correlation functions and to the kinetic energy and things like that. So this is what I'm using. There's another estimate that one can use, which I've also used. I don't remember if it has a name or not. Basically, I get very similar things. Okay, the other estimate gives a lower value for this, to be perfectly honest, but it never touches zero except it never touches zero. When you get close to pi, it just pops up like that. Okay, but it is an approximation.
Right. But it can't really be. I mean, there's always, wouldn't you expect always to be in the bosonization language 2kF excitations down to zero energy? And they may be suppressed in the structure factor, but they're always there, aren't they? Like in, say, the Linniger solution of Pondy bosons, you have these two types of excitations which go down to zero. Is that right, Victor?
Well, so which
are the best? Well, I know that they correspond to the K equals zero branch and the 2KF branch and the bosonization language. But I always thought that you always have them, but for a closed system they would be suppressed. Sorry?
There's only one branch.
No, they definitely talk about two types of excitations.
You can have
a
particle pair,
so separately particles. Wait. In the Fermi language, it corresponds. You can make a particle hole pair where you make a small change of. Mm-hmm. Or you make a big 2kF plus some small change momentum.
Is it my understanding, sir?
Well, these are bosons. You still,
You mean for U equal infinity?
Well, you can always read between those ones. Well, in the hardcore domain.
In the hardcore domain.
So I think it's just one, I mean, it doesn't matter what changes it, if it's KF or it's close to zero, you know it exactly, and yeah. You can call it separate excitation, yes. But it's just a function of K.
Yeah, no, I mean, they make this point, but the point is that there are always these learned excitations of finite K.
But that's true, yes, you can have small change of K, you can change it by 2KF.
Right.
And yes, but this will be the lower energy excitations.
And the usual thing is that they don't contribute much to the structure factor, but it doesn't matter.
Within this approximation, and the other approximation I mentioned, which is a different way to estimate this. So this is what comes out. Okay, I have not for this particular case. I did some test cases for other like for the simpler Hubbard model to see how accurate this approximation can be, where I actually calculated the dynamic structure factor and did the maximum entropy. But even if you do maximum entropy, there's always uncertainty in that. So, I don't know. With the simulations, it's very difficult to say, you know, with more precision, I think, than this. But, you know, you do get the nice linear behavior here, and you do get this. So this is something maybe we can talk about. This is one of the reasons I talk about these things, so that you can tell me more detail what you're thinking of. Okay, so let's all start. Of course, I was talking about the Bose-Fermi mixtures. I only wanted to say that what I want to do next with these was motivated by what I was seeing with these bosons, including these soliton-type creatures, and including eventually a supersolid behavior. Okay, so let me. So let me then look at what happens here when I go away from this double half filling. When I keep the total number of bosons of particles equal to the number of particles, but I shift the proportions, okay, more fermions or more bosons and stuff like that, to see in particular if I what happens to this sort of thing. Do I get this sort of soliton type behavior? Number one. Number two, what happens to the superfluid densities, you know? Okay, so I'm mostly interested here, but I will show you some stuff here. What happens to the superfluid densities? And do I have, in particular, I was also interested, do I have pair superfluidity? Okay, because if I look at this picture here where I said that essentially what happens is I have a picture where you have like a pair which is moving, okay? Does this somehow constitute pair superfluidity or not? Or is this just a picture, a cartoon that we draw, but it's not really a pair that is moving? So I wanted to look at that. Okay. Okay, so I think actually now the show starts. I'll just show you what happens when we do the simulation for these other cases. I think we need to turn this on. Like this.
Experience shows it takes some time for it, maybe a couple of minutes.
It takes a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. I was told it does not. So, you want to talk about something else while we're waiting? Okay. So anyway, so what I'll be talking about is starting with this phase diagram, which is a double half filling, you know, replace fermions by bosons, see what happens, replace bosons by fermions and see what happens. So move up and down the plane, if you like, if we take this direction to be the relative numbers of bosons and fermions. But also for a fixed proportion of bosons and fermions, go like this to see what happens when I cross this line. Okay, so this is basically what I'll be showing you. So...
No signal, so...
I think my...
Press something
on
the computer.
No,
right.
Okay, well, it's...
Okay.
It took 30 seconds then? Okay, it's good to know for the next speaker. Okay, so this is what happened. This is the STW correlation function, okay, that Hans-Peter was talking about, I think. The black points here, this is a double half filling. And you see that it just goes up, down, up, down, up, down, but there's no real structure with it except this. Here at long distance, it just gets a little bit messy, but it's just the up-down oscillations that he was talking about. If you remove four fermions, or if you add four fermions, you get these figures. And here you see that in addition to the usual up-down oscillation that we were talking about, you also see some sort of envelope here and some sort of envelope here. You see this, okay, and these are very typical of this is the sort of thing we see also when in the extended Hubbard model, when I have the solitons and I look at the density-density correlation function, it looks exactly like this. It has this soliton type behavior, and the length of this depends on the doping. Okay, the length of this beating, the length of this beat behavior depends on the doping. A very sort of, again, mean fieldish way of seeing this. I just write a small equation here to motivate this. Is you tell yourself, well, okay, I have my density. Okay, again, this is very sort of back of the envelope mean fieldish type thing. Say your density is equal to the number of particles, let's say bosons, divided by the number of sites, plus a density ripple. Okay, so I have a delta rho, and then I have an e to the I k star x plus e to the minus I k star x. You have a ripple to the left and a ripple to the right with typical momentum k star. So this becomes nb over l plus delta rho, you have a 2 cosine k star x. And you say, well, instead of writing this expression, start, you know, measuring k like from zero, let me measure the distance from pi, okay? Because I used to have an order at pi. So then if you write your k star to be pi minus some other momentum, kappa star, let's say, and the star is because that's the order. So then you get rho of x that equals nb over l plus, and you reduce a little bit of trigonometry, 2 delta rho cosine pi x, and then cosine kappa star x. So you see that what happens in your density, you have the density alternates, you have the average, which is nb over l, and then on even sites, cosine 2 pi times something is 1, so it adds to the ripple. And on odd sides, it subtracts, so it goes up, down, up, down, but you have an envelope given by this, okay? So if you calculate the correlation function of such a...
this rho of x's?
This is the number of particles on a site x, roughly.
Okay. And that is for kind of stationary state, or you start with a certain initial state and then see how...
If you do your simulation and you wait very, very long time and so on, of course the average number of particles per site is constant. Okay, mm-hmm. So it would just be nb over l.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you're calculating correlation function, if you assume this and you calculate your correlation function, in fact, in the correlation function, this envelope will survive. Okay.
I'm mainly asking where's the time.
This is in the stationary limit. There's no time. Okay, so nothing depends on time. Okay, so the correlation function will always exhibit these ripples, even after the ripples in the density itself. If you average over a very, very long time, the number of sites per the number of particles per site just becomes a constant. But there are always this sort of correlations in the system. So there is something that looks like the soliton behavior that I told you about. You do get these envelopes. What's the next figure? So here in this figure, I showed you what happens if you dope, if you dope up and dope down. So we move this way on that phase, on that phase diagram. But here what happens is, what I'm showing is, I fix the proportion of fermions and bosons, and I move this way. Okay. So if I start here at small ub, you have the black points, which you have a little bit of up and down, and then it dies and it's all smooth. Okay, so here it's just this is the Luttinger liquid. There you go. This is STW in the Luttinger liquid. And then as you increase UBF, you go into the STW phase, and again you see these envelopes of these oscillations coming from the solenoid. Okay, so the first question I was interested in.
What distinguishes the phases in those curves? Just the
envelope? Okay. What distinguishes the phases, let's say between what this guy is doing and let's say what the blue is doing, right? Okay, well, one thing that distinguishes them is that, okay, here you might say, but it's a little bit subjective, but one thing that distinguishes them is that here I have this big envelope corresponding to this density fluctuation, but on a more less subjective level, here the green function decays as a power law. And these guys, where I have the blue here, it decays as an exponential. Okay, so there is a definite difference between the two. For example, a demonstration of what I just said. This is a green function for the bosons as a function of distance for basically the whole spectrum of proportions, and you see that's always exponential. And that's basically in this phase here. Okay, so even if you have as few as 5 fermions, it's exponential, and the same is true for the fermions. This is at double half filling, and this is at -4, and this is at +4. This is semi-log, and you see if you look at this, for example, at every other site, it goes down linearly. Every other site goes down linearly, so the whole thing goes down linearly. It's an exponential decay. This is an exponential decay modulated by these beatings that I showed you. Okay, so that's what's happening in this phase. Whereas in this phase, I'm not showing it, but it's just a power law. I don't know if I'll be showing it, but I don't think I'll show it. This is also in this phase here, where I have 35 double half filling is this black, and then the colored ones are a little bit above and a little bit below. But this is the combined green function, and you see that this is semi-log also, but you see that it decays slower. So this is actually a power law, and again, a power law with these speeds. So the general features that we've seen here then is that at double half filling, I reviewed what Lord and Matthias found. If you go away from double half filling, essentially the STW oscillations are robust and they're always there. And okay, we're here just a few pictures of the Fermi. This is NF of K, and this is NB of K. For the case where, this is fixing the interactions and taking away fermions, replacing them by bosons. You see that you never really have. This is when you start around here. You never really have a nice Fermi surface. It's all so curvy and it's below one. And here you don't have a nice peak in N of K. Okay, so here you don't have a nice. The fermions know that they are strongly interacting. This is another way of putting it. And if you do it the other way, you fix 39 bosons and 31 fermions, and then you scan in U. So you go like this. You see that for small U, that's the black, have a very nice sharply defined Fermi surface, which as you increase U, of course, it starts curving and then eventually disappears. And here, you see this is the black is at UBF is zero. You have a nice peak like this corresponding to the quasi-condensate, and that also disappears as you enter this phase here. So this is another way of distinguishing these two phases, you see? This is... coming back to your question. This is an interesting figure. Now, coming back to the superfluid densities. So here we fix the number of fermions to be 39, number of bosons to be 31. And then we look at what happens when we scan this way. In this region here, let's say, the weak U, this is the fermion stiffness and this is the boson stiffness, okay. If you look at just the simple sum divided by 4, that's the green here, so it's here. If you look at UBF plus, this is the average of WB plus WF, the quantity squared, divided by 4. And this is the one with the anti-correlated one, divided by 4. You see that these three quantities are the same here, okay? Which tells you that the windings of the fermions and the bosons are completely independent, okay? If you go to the other extreme, you go here, and in between there's going to be the phase transition between them. But if you go to the other extreme, you see that the correlated one, the one coming from, just to write down the definition again, the one coming from the, what did I call it, the rho BF plus, rho BF plus, which is L over 2 beta WB plus WF squared, you see that one is zero, okay? It is strictly zero, which means every time the boson winds in one direction, the fermion winds in the other direction, okay? And if you look at the anti-correlated one divided by 4, you see that it's equal to the fermion stiffness separately and to the boson stiffness separately, okay? And that the simple sum is less than this. Okay, so here we have essentially perfect anti-correlation. If a boson winds, you know, has a positive winding, a fermion at the same time must have a negative winding. This is very strongly anti-correlated winding. And this, I remind you, is this happens where the combined Green function is a power law. Okay, here the combined Green function is also a power law, but the separate Green functions are power laws. Here, the separate Green functions are exponentials, but only the combined one is a power law.
So you get a counter-superion.
Exactly. Okay. So the bosons go like this, and the fermions go like that. Okay. And so if you do a here, if you do it in a, as a sort of a histogram, I think that the thing is too low. So the vertical axis is WF, the fermion winding, and the horizontal axis is the boson winding, and this one is at a U of 1, so you're at the weak coupling here. So you see that it's very symmetric. The brightness tells you, the brightness is basically the value. So it's basically very symmetric. The bosons and fermions are winding completely independently. You do it like here, you increase U a little bit, and you can start seeing some antisymmetries, some asymmetries. You see that this is, this and this are a little bit brighter than this and this, okay? So the asymmetry is forming, and you increase it a little bit more, becomes more asymmetric, and then the largest value we did, I think, is this. So you see that when the fermion has a winding of 1, the boson has a winding of minus 1. This is 0, right? Okay? So it just follows very... okay, and then finally... again, coming back at the question that you posed, this is the structure factor for the SGW correlation function. And you see that at double half filling, it has a peak at pi, okay, corresponding to a, you know, up, down, up, down, up, down spin, let's say. And then as you dope away from half filling by changing the proportion of fermions and bosons, the peak, this peak here disappears. It goes down, and you develop a peak at a slightly different k, and then you dope more, and the value of k moves. This corresponds, I removed it, this corresponds to this, when I said, you know, you have something like this, and you dope more, and it moves back, and you dope more, it moves back, the k is moving, okay? So very similar things happen here, and this is doing exactly the same thing, but as a function of u. The black curve corresponds to U of 1. So here, I do not have SGW. And you see, I don't really have a peak. And then as you increase your U and come to here, where you have the strong SGW fluctuations, you see that your peak starts to form and becomes much more pronounced. Okay? So I think, I don't know, I think I have talked quite a lot. I can just show you one quick figure if you like. Or if you don't like, it's too late. This is what happens. This was one of the other main reasons why we started doing this. This is what happens when you do the following. We took 64 sites. We put 64 bosons. UBB is 8. So the bosons are in Mott phase. Put 35 fermions on them. and then study what happens as a function of UBF. Okay? At small UBF, you see the black circles is the superfluid density, the bosonic superfluid density is zero because you're in a Mott phase. And the fermions, they are winding. There's just a Luttinger liquid on sitting on top of a Mott insulator. They have I did not make the figure, but they have a nice Fermi surface and so on. But as you start approaching this region here, as UBF starts approaching UBB, okay, here UBB is 8, here this value is around 6, 6.5, something like this. The fermions start kicking the bosons out of their sites. Okay, and so what happens is the boson superfluid density shoots up. At the same time, the Fermi stiffness keeps going smoothly down. But at the same time, if you look, for example, at the simple sum of the boson superfluid and the Fermi stiffness, that's the bright green, that's this one. If you look at the anti-correlated superfluid density, you see it is larger than the simple sum. Okay? But it's not like four times the thing or whatever. So this is, again, comes, I think, to maybe your question, that this is just some sort of generic mixture. Okay? There's nothing fine-tuned or special about this. You see that, and just you make the soup. Okay? As long as UBF is large, comparable to UBB, you are going to have the soup where you have independent winding of bosons and fermions, but you also have some correlated winding. So it's not all correlated like the case I showed you before, but you still have correlated winding. That phase does not disappear. It's just a generic phase no matter what you do, if they are strongly interacting like this. Okay? So the last thing I will tell you about is what we plan to do. Maybe that's the part that shouldn't be taped. No, this is what we're working on. What we're working on now is what happens. What happens if you, instead of taking this, if you do T boson is a quarter and TF is one. So the fermions can hop a lot easier than the bosons.
Why one quarter?
Why one quarter is because that's the value they took. But what's important is that there be this imbalance in them, okay? they took one quarter, so it's easier to start from something already known. And what they find is this phase diagram changes essentially just like this. Again, this is just a sketch of the phase diagram which they plotted carefully. So here, this is SGW and this is CTW. Okay, because now you know the bosons can hop with a lot more difference. I mean, in the limit where TB is zero, for example, the bosons are not going to hop, and the fermions will intersperse them, and you just get perfect CTW. And if TB is still weak enough, the CTW phase will persist. So now the interesting question would be, can I have a supersolid with this? For me, the interesting question would be, can one have supersolids with this? If I dope above or below half filling, or what would happen to this phase diagram if we start playing around with the doping? Okay, so this is how we are progressing with this project. All of this is now we're sort of putting it together in a more coherent picture and doing this.
When TP and TF become different.
Yeah. I mean, one extreme is to make one of them zero, right? So it cannot hop anymore. So this is just to motivate in your mind why you might have CD, a strict charge order, but that also persists when it is finite but small. I don't know what the critical value is in the relationship between TB and TF. I don't think it's equality. It probably happens before equality, but the parameter space is so huge that not all of it has been determined.
If you set TB to zero, then there will be no phase correlation between the bosons of different size.
That's right.
As you cannot talk about
No, but I mean, but you can put TV to zero and say, okay, you know, how can I minimize my energy? What, how should I distribute the bosons in order to minimize my energy, right? Because the fermions can still hop, right? And so you put you choose a configuration of bosons, you calculate the energy, you choose another configuration, and you find that it's the CDW that minimizes your energy. That's the only way to do it if TB is really zero, right? Because they're not going to move to find the energy for you.
On top of that, if TB is not zero, then maybe we'll have a superfluid density of bosons non zero. And that's why.
If TB here?
Yes.
It's CD, it's not it's CDW, it's the superfluid density is zero here, and it's a phase transition. I mean, it's like, I mean, if you think of the extended Hubbard model where I showed you the phase diagram, was like this, you know, here you have CDW and here you have a superfluid. I mean, you can have a phase transition from superfluid to CDW, where and here T is one, you know, it's just zero. The superfluid density is zero.
But what I was trying to understand, in what sense is super solid?
Oh, I don't know if it's super solid. We don't know if it's super solid, but I mean, this is something that we would like to look at. And in this case, what happened with the super solid was I had something like this, right? And I arrange things such that when I add a boson, it goes on a already occupied site, and then it starts hopping around, and so I maintain long-range density order, but at the same time, I had a superfluid density, okay? So now, could something like that happen over there, right? Except there, the circle would be a boson, and the X would be a fermion, not an empty site, okay? But it could still happen that even though TB is small, if you add a boson here, the cost is so high that this guy likes to jump. I don't know, you know, it's going to change. Yeah?
Sorry. But if you want to see a super solid here, wouldn't you prefer to fix the fermionic density at all filling such that it would always give rise to a commensurate density wave of change the boson density?
That's what I would like to do here.
So here you really, but you. Okay.
Here I said I don't know what happens either way, but what I would like to do is add bosons.
Okay.
Up until now, you were keeping the total number of particles fixed.
Except for the last thing I showed you with the Mott phase, but otherwise the total number was fixed. But here I would actually dope. I would add a boson or
so
a few.
You add Hartree or Rayleigh, and then you add bosons in relation to this
Schiffer. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I would like to do. That's what we want to do here. Thanks.